So this is the second day of our four-day retreat on the Full Awareness of Breath Sutra. I have with me something very important. That I want everyone to see. This is the culprit. Right? This is the culprit. Please look.
I see delicious.
Delicious.
Yeah.
You see delicious when you look at this, whatever it is. It's a brownie? I don't know. Is it chocolate? Well, I don't know. It's a brownie. So this is a brownie. Brownie is a label, isn't it? It's a name. This thing itself doesn't call itself brownie, does it? This thing itself doesn't call itself anything, does it? Yeah, it doesn't have to. So this is just a thing. And even though somebody calls it a brownie, and somebody else says delicious, that label of brownie and that statement of delicious is arising in you. It is not in this brownie, right? It is not in this. This is just this, right? This is all this is. This is just this. It doesn't know anything. It doesn't know its name. It doesn't know that people like it or don't like it, that people crave it or are averse to it. It just is. There is nothing here at all but this. It is non-self. Why is it non-self? Because nothing, if you took all its parts apart, its parts would be flour, water, chocolate, butter, milk, and, you know, if you took all the ingredients, you would find nothing called a brownie. You would just find parts. And even those parts you could take apart and find parts. So there is nothing here inherently in any way that we could call a brownie. Just a bunch of parts put together, mixed up, and baked. Right? We need heat. And lots of, you know, we could keep going on and on, breaking down each part, and we'll end up in the whole universe. This is just this, a bunch of parts put together. Non-self is present here. It is also impermanent, right? Whether one eats it or not, over time it will dissolve, it will decompose. Right? Just left to its own nature, there is no stability here. It is impermanent. So, anatma, non-self is here, anicca, impermanence in here, and also dukkha is here, unsatisfactoriness. Why is this unsatisfactory? Not because of weight gain, and not because of sugar addiction. It is unsatisfactory because in and of itself there is no innate satisfaction here. If you enjoy it, the enjoyment is in you. The happiness is in you. The pleasure is in you. There is no satisfaction. When the Buddha said that the third mark of existence is dukkha or unsatisfaction, he meant that in any phenomena, there is nothing inherently satisfying. And because the experience of any phenomena is always temporary, it will eventually lead to some sort of loss, some sort of something. So, Everything in the Buddhist teaching is here in this. So whether you pick it up or walk by is immaterial to this brownie. It just is. So why do we make a big deal about it? Right? Because of what goes on here. You know, there are people that blame the fact that they overeat or they eat the wrong foods because of the food, you know? Right? Well, it's in the fridge. It's in the freezer. It's in the pantry. It's on the shelf in the store, you know? when we think about it, we go, that's crazy. Right? The thing itself didn't call me. Jump into my shopping cart, did it? No. This thing, you may think that brownies speak to you. People talk like that. But they really don't. You know, that's kind of delusional. they don't speak. They don't call us. They just are. Right. But we have gotten so delusional, we actually can hear them calling us, right? People can, you know, people can be upstairs in their house and hear these things calling them from the kitchen. Come eat me. Right? It's not so. Now, we said that today we are looking at Vedana, the second tetrad, dealing with feeling sensations, which is the second tetrad, and the second mindfulness. Mindfulness of feelings. And as I said earlier, again, feelings, please remember, it is not emotions. It's really just feeling / sensation that just, it's that initial contact that is either pleasurable, unpleasurable, or neutral. If it is, how do we know it's pleasurable? Because we are drawn toward it or we want it to continue. How do we know it's unpleasurable? It's because we want to get away from it or we want to push it away. And how do we know it's neutral? Because we're indifferent. Right? And all our contacts with phenomena, there is always Vedana present. And I think it's very important because even though we are talking about this brownie and somebody yesterday talked about chocolate addictions and things like that, that feeling tone of positive or negative is really very much a controller of our behavior, and especially around addictive kind of relationships to anything. So it is something that we can discover through the light of mindfulness. So we would say that you walk into the kitchen here, right, or to the dining room. And you see, on a plate, this. Right? When the eye makes contact, you don't realize it. But unconsciously, you are either... Okay. So, raise hands honestly. How many people, when they saw these, had a pleasurable Vedana? Okay. How many, hands down, how many people had negative Vedana, aversion? And how many people are neutral, indifferent? Okay. So those of you who had it, please understand, you know, the conditioned nature of it. There's nothing inherently delicious in this. But there is something, again, that has been conditioned in your mind that when you see, and what our joke last year was that people were labeling one thing, and it really wasn't even that. When it was cake or something. People going, "What kind of strange brownie is this?" People, there was a lot of disappointment last year, because people saw this and they thought they were getting a brownie. Then they were eating it, and ugh. But then they found that it was, you know, that it also, you know, mislabeling is another whole thing in Buddhist psychology. We won't get into. But it is interesting, right? That the beginning of that whole drama that you, you know, that you got involved with yesterday, and I'm sure there was lots of other people in it, begins with that initial contact. It's interesting. Where you see something, smell something, taste something, and the mind wants to go toward it. Right? And that is usually conditioned. Right? We don't realize, but there's an unconscious thing, and as people will go, because those who go positive probably have a certain kind of relationship with sweets or chocolate. Those people who go negative have a very different kind of history with sweets and chocolate, and those are indifferent the same. So we don't realize that it's really our conditioning around this vedana, positive, negative, and neutral, that is either propelling us toward or away. And again, that is in everything. Right? In all the objects we see, sounds we hear, tastes, so many people have such difficulty with uncomfortable sensations in their body. We know. I mean, those of us who have spent a long time meditating, we know that sooner or later, and probably much sooner than later, we run into uncomfortableness in the body, right? Pain in the body. Now, again, when we first experience that sensation of pain, what is it? Positive, negative, or neutral? How many people have a positive sensation when they experience pain? How many people have a neutral experience when they... How many people have a negative experience? Can you see? So our immediate thing is what? We either want to push it away or we want to get away from it. Right? And then begins the drama. Right? Then the mental formations. Then the mind takes over and the drama begins. Right? But it's all coming from that initial... We don't even realize there's negative vedana, negative sensation, and immediately there's a wanting to get away from or get rid of it. An emotion. Right? Many people do not like to feel certain emotions. They don't like to feel sad. They don't like to feel scared. They don't like to feel angry. They don't like to feel lonely. Lonely. I mean, there are all kinds of emotions that people, when those emotions arise in them, again, positive, negative, or neutral vedana. Can you see? We either want to push it away or get away from it. And if you know about addictions or kind of acting out, we know a lot of it's around what? People trying to get away from feelings. How about boredom? A lot of people, as soon as that arises, they want to get away from it, right? So, we could go on and on. We see a person. Sometimes it's a person that we have a history with. We see their name, a name appears on our caller ID. Right? So again, it's not only... In the world of forms, but it's also in the world of thoughts, right? I mean, one can just have a label, and one can have positive, negative, and connotations. One sees somebody's caller ID and immediate response is what? I'm not picking it up, right? Negative vedana. Right? On the other hand, it could be a number or name of somebody you really like, positive vedana. Hi, right? So, the capacity to see this very elemental, and again, most of us, we skip over it. This is why I think it's very important that the Buddha made this the focus for the second tetrad, before the third, which is mental formations, which is the whole realm of thought, core beliefs, emotions. He did this one. Because you'll be amazed to see how much of your behavior and how much of your emotional life is being set off unconsciously by this process. We're often dealing with stuff at the level of mental formations and emotions. That's kind of where we get it. And by then, it is already fairly embroidered at that point. Right? It's sort of like, you know, the cat is out of the bag. The horse is out of the stable. You know, it's kind of already running around wild. It's much harder to get it back in. But at this basic level, right? Now again, there is nothing inherently good or bad in this, is there? It's just this. Now, based on the context of your life, and your health and your body, you may want to put this in, or you may not want to put it into your body. Right? I mean, that's really all it's about. And whether you put it into your body or not into your body should be about what? What's good for my body? It's a simple decision. But if that's not where we're coming from, but it's like, gotta have. I mean, why do you have to have this? I mean, if I left it out for 4 days and it was a little moldy, would you still want it? What? I know. I mean, if somebody, this sounds kind of gross, but I have to say it. I mean, if somebody chewed it and then put it back out, same ingredients, would you find it delicious? No. So it's also how it's packaged, right? You know, if it was kind of flat like a big pancake and very thin, you may. It depends. But it's also the packaging, the way it looks, that often attracts us. We know. I mean, if there's any, you know, I think people who understand positive and negative Vedana very well is the advertising marketing industry. They're very sophisticated. They must have studied Buddhist psychology, because they understand, give people a positive image, something that attracts them. It may have nothing to do with the product at all. I mean, why are, you know, attractive young women, you know, selling carpets, you know, in carpet advertisement? You know, you look at big carpet advertisements, tires. I mean, you know, you go, well, there's a reason. What? Trying to create a positive Vedana, right? You know, why is everybody drinking Coke and Pepsi, youthful and young and alive and having a great time? Why? Vedana. Positive Vedana. Now, so is this clear? So this is very important, and will make your life a lot easier if you can learn to see this at this level. Okay. And again, where the Buddha says, breathe in and out, I'm aware of sensations, feelings. I'm aware of the mental processes, which is the labeling, right? So in other words, if I say, I don't want to keep picking on cat, who else was very positive around chocolate? All right. So if I said, chocolate cake, you'd go, where? Right? I mean, can you see? You don't even need it. It's just the word, right? Already sets you off. But again, your capacity of knowing when there is all, you know, when Fred says chocolate cake and you go, sign me up, right? If you can just be aware in your mindfulness that that's all that's occurring, you know, just Vedana. And when you see it, the second part is you can calm it. Calm it means you can what? I can let it go. I don't have to be driven by it. And whether I pick this up or don't pick this up is not a big deal. Right? Whether you had one piece yesterday, no pieces yesterday, 10 pieces yesterday, in the course of your life, it doesn't matter, does it? Does it? No. Why does it matter so much in the moment? Whether we have a second piece or not. again, you know, this doesn't mean, you know, when we go into lunch today, and if there's a suite out there, you know, you have to spend a half an hour, you know, frozen before the cookie plate. You know, analysis creates paralysis. I mean, I don't want to make this too serious, you know what I mean, that you feel like you have to... Yeah, thank you for saying that. I didn't want to ruin the party. So again, please understand, and this is the wonderful thing about the Buddha's teachings, that it's not a series of prohibitions, right? Mindfulness and deep looking is a process, right? It says, you investigate yourself. When we're dealing now with the 16 meditations, and when we're dealing with the four kinds of mindfulness, all we're looking at is what? Just our experience of being human beings. I mean, this is nothing incredible. This is nothing esoteric or metaphysical or otherworldly. The Buddha is just inviting us to stop, tetrad one, right? Stop, come back to your breath, come back to your body, calm, unify, clarify, right? And then to begin to investigate what it means to be a human being and have human experience. That's all we're looking at, right? There's nothing religious in this, there's nothing dogmatic in this. This is, we could say, pure psychology. Understand your mind. Understand the nature of your impulses. Understand the nature of your craving desires. So coming back to this, right? So first there is contact. It could be visual contact. I mean, it could be you're sitting in here and maybe they're cooking them. And people who are very sensitive may already, right? Make a contact, positive, right? And already from that contact and from that positive, in this case positive, it could be negative or whatever, vedana, we move into what? Grasping. Well, before grasping, we could say there is desiring. Right? So we'll just use this as a teaching moment, but it really means for everything, right? It just begins with a sense organ making contact with a sense object. And again, the mind in Buddhism is considered a sense organ. So you just may have an image of something or a thought about something, right? And if there's a positive vedana, you will what? You will begin to want it. That's all. It wasn't in your mind a minute ago. You weren't thinking about chocolate a minute ago. It was no big deal to you, right? Could have gone to lunch, no chocolate, no big deal. But now it's become something because you smelled it and you saw it. And you begin to move toward it. A little bit of desire, wanting. And then grasping. Grasping is what? Yeah, gotta have it. I take it. I reach out. You know, grasping is physical, right? If I grasp the watch, I am now holding it. Right? And that's what we do. We grasp at objects. We grasp at experiences. We grasp at things that arise in our mind. We grasp at emotions. Right? We grasp. And then if we're not careful, we attach, right? So when somebody says, I went from contact, positive vedana, to desiring, to grasping, but now I got attached, and now I want what? another one. See, I'm now attached to it. So I want to keep that going. That was so pleasurable. I want to keep it going. So now I'm attached to it. It's like I grasp it, right? This is grasping. But now I can't let go. Right? I can't let go. I got to eat that pint of ice cream right to the bottom. I can't let go. I'm attached. I'm attached to that person. I'm attached to that experience. I'm attached to that feeling. I'm attached, you know. Right? This process needs to be looked deeply at. That's what we're doing these next couple of days. Now again, you know, the mental formation piece is also a big piece, because it's going to come in. Because we have in our minds seeds of desire, seeds of grasping, seeds of attaching, as well as we have history around food or chocolate, or you know what I mean? So all this will come in. I mean, it's amazing, right? It happens in a moment. We don't even know it. That a whole complexity of our mind is coming together in this moment. The only thing that unravels it is mindfulness and looking deeply. And then it's all clear what's going on here. It's just a process. It's just a process. It's just what happens. And of course, we do the same thing on aversion. And we may be pushing away lots of things that are good. You know? Like with your children, you know. Greens are good for you. Right? But they push it away. Fresh vegetables are good for you, but they push it away, right? Because they have vedana. So many of us may be pushing away foods, experiences, people, mind states that we have negative vedana about. And then there is the larger scheme of thing of so many things we're indifferent to that we don't notice, because it's in that biggest middle ground, you know, neutral indifference. We know that when we practice mindfulness, when we walk outside, left to our own devices, we will go to the flowers. Right? And we will go to the blue sky, the clouds, the water. But yet, if we are conscious and aware, we realize we can stop at anything, can't we? And look at it. And all of a sudden, when we develop curiosity and interest, all of a sudden we can have what? A positive experience, can't we? You know, looking at a weed. Weed is a label. By the way, weeds don't call themselves weeds. They don't know that. They don't know they're a weed. They think they're just like these guys. You know, they grow outdoors, they go through whatever they go through, they develop the way they do, they have their little bit of territory, the rain rains on them just like the azaleas, you know, they think they're equals. Again, in the human realm, you know, sanghas come to an end, meditation's over, and everybody kind of gets up and looks around, and as we see all our faces, we have what? Positive vedana towards some? That we have relationship we like? There may be a couple that we may have negative vedana and we're indifferent to. So we go immediately to who? The people that we have the positive. But if we knew that that's all that's kind of beginning to push us, right? That's what's pushing us. And if we can just be aware of that, we may realize what? That there's somebody over there that I could go talk to. And in talking to them, I can have the possibility of creating positive. And there could even be someone that I have a negative to. And if I go talk to them and show interest in them, it may all of a sudden turn things around. So this vedana is very interesting because I think one of the things that mindfulness reveals to us is the inherent value and worth of everything. But it is this reactive formations we have that is often pushing us. That is why the teacher says in the morning teaching of the third patriarch, stop picking and choosing. In verses on the same. He says that picking and choosing, they say, is the disease of the mind. Because to pick and choose is to say, this is good, this is bad. I want this, I don't want that. Now again, this doesn't mean that when we go shopping or anything, that we don't have to make a choice. But it means that it's not a big deal if we don't get what we want and have to get something else. Right? It's all good, isn't it? We do not have to be slaves to our conditioning. Most of our likes and our dislikes are conditioned. They're conditioned by the families we grew up in. They're conditioned by our society. They're conditioned by choices we've made all over the years. That's all. And we've turned them into our operating principle for our life as if they're true, solid, real. Not like that. That's why I said yesterday, you know, you always sit in the front, try down the back. You always sit in the back, come up front. You always sit next to this person, go sit next to somebody else. Right? It's all open. We're here to be free. Right? Is anybody wondering about what are the seven factors of enlightenment? I mentioned that yesterday. I was wondering whether people were disappointed that Fred hasn't gotten there yet. He promised to tell us today, didn't he? Thank you, Charlie, Andrew. So again, in section 3, the Buddha elucidates the four establishments of mindfulness. And again, these are all in this sutra. But he's really, in this section, I won't read it, he's just elucidating how, and again, the four establishments of mindfulness are mindfulness of the body, in the body. Mindfulness of sensations in the sensation, mindfulness of the mind in the mind, and mindfulness of the objects of mind. Those are the, and really, again, these are just the realm of human experience. Right? We have bodies, form. We have feeling sensations. We have mind and mental events. And we have all the objects that the senses and the mind perceives. And what the Buddha is teaching is the practice of mindfulness means that we are mindful of these four areas of our life. This is where we shine the light of mindfulness. The key phrase is when he says the body in the body. So what he's saying is subject and object are one. We are not like outside, we are in our bodies. We are our bodies. We are the feelings. We are the sensations. We are the thoughts. We are mindful of them in them, not outside of them. So that is why we say, when we're practicing mindful of the body, we don't say, kind of stand back and look at your body. We say what? Enter your body with awareness. Feel your body from the inside. Right? So you're mindful of the body in the body. Right? You are experiencing the positive, negative sensations when you look at it, when you look at them. You're not just an outside observer, like if you're on a research project and you're in a corner of room just making notations. You are an active participant. So these are the four establishments of mindfulness. But I think you know all this. So then in section 4, the Buddha says, moreover, if they are developed and continuously, there's that word again. If they are developed and continuously practiced, the four establishments of mindfulness will lead to perfect abiding in the seven factors of awakening. How is this so? And now the Buddha begins. When the practitioner can maintain without distraction, you see these little words, continuous. When the practitioner can maintain without distraction, I mean, these are the practice words. Continuous, without distraction. These are he instructing us how we practice. Right? So we cannot be distracted. When we're doing this type of practice, we need to be focused on it. And any teacher who's teaching anybody, anything will say what? Don't be distracted, pay attention. A teacher in class, kids looking out the window, daydreaming, teacher will say what? Pay attention. How are you going to learn if you don't pay attention? Kids are doodling, kids are texting, They're distracted. They can't learn the material if they're distracted. We cannot learn the material if we're distracted. So we are observing the phenomena of our own experience. And we have to do it, to one degree or another, single-mindedly. When the practitioner can maintain without distraction the practice of observing the body in the body, the feelings in the feelings, the mind in the mind, and the objects of the mind in the objects of the mind, persevering, fully awake, clearly understanding his or her state, gone beyond all attachment and aversion to this life, with unwavering, steadfast, imperturbable meditative stability, she will attain the first factor of awakening, namely mindfulness. When this factor is developed, it will come to perfection. So the first factor that's involved in the Buddhist tradition of being awake is mindfulness. And the Buddha sets a high bar for its for it to be fully present. But again, it's important that we set a bar for ourselves, but not too high a bar. So, when we're doing the practice, we want to be as persistent as we can be. We want to be alert as we can be. We want to clearly, to the best of our ability, understand our state of mind. gone beyond all attachment and aversion to this life means in that moment my mind is not attaching to anything. I'm willing to clearly look at it. I mean, if here's poor Kathy again. If Kathy is still very attached to chocolate, it'll be very hard for her to objectively look at it. So what the Buddha is saying is not that you, I mean, we could say an enlightened bodhisattva is free of all attachment, but what the Buddha is saying is in that moment when you are practicing mindfulness of something, in that moment be free of those so you can look deeply and objectively at your own experience. All right? It's not as if, you know, you have to be free of all attachments, all aversion. But in that moment of deep looking, enter that place of freedom. Unswavering, steadfast, imperturbable, meditative stability. Those are all sort of talking about the same thing, right? Actually, when we were in Deer Park not too long ago, there was a meeting of Dharma teachers in the Thich Nhat Hanh tradition. Somebody brought a video of a talk that Thay had given, and that was his big word, imperturbability, and it's a big one, and he had to write it on the board so he could say it right, because it was right, and he really set that forth as like a key component to practice, to be imperturbable. Imperturbable means nothing bothers you. What?
Nothing without disturbance.
Yeah, nothing disturbs you. You're imperturbable. It was interesting. Somehow he discovered that word and he must have gone, this is it. This is what practice is about. To be imperturbable, to have that ability. Not to be always up and down. Always back and forth. Always to be disturbed about something. We don't want to be the princess in the pea, remember her? Right? She was not imperturbable, was she? Right? Even a little pea, 10 mattresses down, got her nose bent a little out of shape there, right? We don't want to be like that, do we? Because if we're very perturbable, is that a state? To be perturbable? What? Perturbed? Perturbed. We don't want to... Spoken as a woman who does a lot of crossword puzzles. Right. We don't want to be perturbed in this life. Because if we're perturbed, if we're like the princess in the pea, you know, what are we going to do for the big stuff? Right? You know, the Katrinas of this life. You know, the earthquakes, the Haitian earthquakes of this life. We would hope that situations like that would be the tests of our imperturbability. But if we find that we cannot maintain that just in the course of our daily life, we need to look deeply with our mindfulness at our attachments and our aversions, because that's what it's about. We want things to be a certain way and we don't want things to be another way. And when it doesn't, it's not going our way, we are what? Perturbed. What's the difference between perturbed and disturbed? Anyhow, I won't go. sort of sounds this. What?
Same. An element of anger being perturbed.
Uh-huh. First, what?
Turbulence in both.
Perturbed is more animate. Yeah, more animate. A little. So when mindfulness is present, we've attained the first factor of awakening. Again, in the realm of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, we can say that that mindfulness is a consistent, persistent, continuous process. It is, if it is a factor of awakening, it means it's always present in them. It doesn't mean that for us it cannot be present situationally. So don't, again, set the bar too high. When we are in mindfulness, when we are aware of the body in the body, when we are aware of sensations in the sensations, feelings, mind in mind, objects in objects, in that moment, a factor of awakening has arisen in us. It is no different than the Buddhas. Mindfulness is mindfulness. When Thich Nhat Hanh eats this brownie, right? And when Kathy Donna eats this brownie, if they eat it in mindfulness, there'll be one taste. In that moment, Buddhas and sentient beings are equal. The same. In that moment when mindfulness is present. Please understand that's the way it is. Don't turn things into things. Don't turn reality into extra special mind states that exist somewhere else. The mindfulness we experience in a moment of clear mindfulness is the mindfulness of the Buddhas. Because it comes from our Buddha mind, that capacity. When the practitioner can abide in meditative stability without being distracted and can investigate every dharma, dharma here is small d, means phenomena, things, every object of mind that arises, the second factor of awakening will be born and developed in him. The factor of investigating dharmas. When this factor is developed, it will come to perfection. So the second is this capacity to investigate dharmas. The first is mindfulness. Mindfulness what? Lets us know what is occurring in the present moment. That's mindfulness. But the second, it's interesting, this is very important. The Buddha didn't leave it in mindfulness. This is why there are many people who may be interested in our mindfulness practice, mindfulness for stress reduction, mindfulness for this, mindfulness for that. But that's not the full Buddhist path. Right? Because the Buddha says what? Factor number two is dharmas must be investigated. We must look deeply into reality to see, you know, so we talked, you know how much time we spent with this? That's the second factor. We're investigating, this is a dharma, this is a thing. And if we just call it, oh, it's a brownie, we don't see what? But no, when we look deeply, we say, no, you know, impermanence, non-self, dissatisfaction are all present here. We don't see that the nature of this brownie is all its non-brownie elements. So the exercise that we did today is the practice that we're talking about. The second factor of awakening. The first factor of awakening, mindfulness, tells us there is a dharma to be investigated. Right? There is a phenomena that has arisen in my awareness. And I will now investigate it. It's science, really. You know, it's a science. But it's meant, it's a kind of science that the Buddha and his followers have been practicing for 2,500 years. Because the object of their scientific investigation is their own experience. And the technology of meditations that the Buddhists have developed is a technology that teaches us how to be objective about subjective phenomena. When the practitioner can observe and investigate every Dharma in a sustained, persevering and steadfast way without being distracted, the third factor of awakening will be born and developed in her, the factor of energy. When this factor is developed, it will come to perfection. So the third factor is, you could say, energetic application, energy, persistence, ceaseless practice. But all this, you know, you got to continue with this, right? Your practice of Dharma has to be energized. Don't just stop with one brownie. It looks like there could be ginger cakes and carrot cakes to be investigated. And it doesn't mean, again, the Buddhist path is not a path of denial, it is a path of understanding. Right? You observe the phenomena as it arises in you. Right? As I said earlier, please, as you go into the dining room, as you walk around, just learn by observing positive and negative and neutral vedana arising in you. Right? You can still enjoy your carrot cake and your ginger cupcake, can't you? Because your enjoyment of it really has nothing to do with all your attachments and your addictions and your formations. That's contamination. Right? You can get those all out of the way and still enjoy your brownie. But now you can be free. There's no addiction, there's no attachment, there's no regret afterwards. All those things that we do with this. So the third factor of awakening is energy. I think I'm going to stop here and we'll continue. We'll finish up the next four and then we'll get into Master Tong Hoi tomorrow, because it's a little after 12 and it'd be nice to do some walking meditation before. Thank you.